Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production.
Now available on Apple Podcasts,
Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Happy Sunday. Today we have a special treat for you. Pastor of Calvary Chapel, Signal Hill, James Cadiz, very good friend of mine that I spoke at his church about a month ago. He's here on the Charlie Kirk Show. James's family is originally from Egypt. He has some very important takes on BLM Incorporated, critical race theory, and President Trump. You are going to love this Sunday episode. If you guys really enjoy keeping these episodes advertiser-free, and you enjoy the 12 episodes plus that we give you guys a week, please consider supporting us at charliekirk.com/support. And on this Sunday, please continue to pray for President Trump and his family as he fights the Chinese coronavirus. Again, thank you guys for supporting us at charliekirk.com/support. Please email us your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com, freedom@charliekirk.com. If you guys want to win a signed copy of the New York Times bestseller, The MAGA Doctrine, type in Charlie Kirk Show to your podcast provider, hit subscribe, and give us a 5-star review. James Cadiz is here, everybody, with our special Sunday episode made possible by our supporters, charliekirk.com/support. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this episode of the Charlie Kirk Show. So thrilled to be joined by a dear friend of mine, Pastor James Cadiz. Pastor, I've only known you for a couple months now, and it's been awesome. I met you at Pastor Jack Hibbs Church, Calvary Chapel, Chino Hills, and you're just awesome. You have a great energy about yourself, and you invited me to come speak at Signal Hill, Calvary Chapel, Signal Hill. We did three services together. We spent the whole day together. It was so much fun, and we immediately connected, and then I started to really listen to what you were saying. I was like, I love this guy. And you were saying what I have been wanting more pastors to say. My pastor, Rob McCoy, has been leading the charge up in Thousand Oaks. You're also under attack. So, Pastor James, just introduce yourself first to the audience. You are the pastor of Calvary Chapel, Signal Hill, but you have a pretty awesome testimony.
Yeah, you know, God is so faithful. So as you said, my name is James Cadiz. I'm the senior pastor of Calvary Chapel, Signal Hill. My mom and my dad were both born and raised in Egypt. I have quite a heritage behind me because my grandfather, so my dad's father, was a pastor in Egypt for 65 years. Wow. And not a Coptic pastor. We're talking a Presbyterian pastor. So he knows what persecution looks like. My mom's father was in the same boat, 35 years as a Baptist pastor in Egypt. So neither of them were the traditional Christians that tend to be in that neutral position in Egypt. I'm first generation born in this country. Obviously, I was born being able to speak my parents' native language. I was always taught to love the United States of America. My mom and my dad has always had a love for America. And they raised me up in the ways of the Lord. And so, you know, I wasn't one of these guys that had some crazy past or anything like that. But I can tell you that when God got a hold of my heart, he changed me pretty radically. And very much like you, Charlie, I got involved serving the Lord at a really young age. And I consider what you do a great ministry. You know, you travel around in many of the same circles that I do, but the difference here with you is that God has blessed you on a national level and actually on an international level where you're doing a lot of things. And at a very young age, you started. You started, my goodness, what are you, 26 now?
Yeah.
And you started when you were probably even 15, 14 years old. You started earlier than me. And when I got saved at 16 years old. I've been teaching the Bible now for 27 years. And it's been a tremendous blessing. It's been an honor. And, you know, we have a national radio show where we're all over the country. And God has been able to, for whatever reason, and I still will never understand it, use this platform to be able to teach people to love God first, right? Love their families. And, of course, I've always had a great love for our country, which is why I absolutely love you. And I've been so
Thank
blessed.
You.
And that's why I think we've become very kindred
yes.
with one another for that very reason.
Well, and you speak out boldly and unapologetically. I love your YouTube channel, by the way. It is awesome.
You,
and so
Thank
let's
so
just
much.
Get right into it. And that was a phenomenal introduction. You're under accusations by some people saying pastors should not be involved in politics. What do you have to say about that?
I think it's actually immoral. I'll go as far as to say it's actually disgusting. Let me just simply say this. To any pastor who would say that those of us that are Christians, and especially church leaders, pastors, should not be involved in politics, let me ask you this question. What other area of my life do you want me to compartmentalize away from God? What other area of my life do you want me to create an exclusionary clause with respect to how I carry myself? What other area of my life do I not apply my Christian worldview? And I think that those are questions that they need to be held to answer, because those that don't answer that question, truth be told, honestly, they need to really consider whether or not they should be in the ministry. Because my view is this: if you choose not to get involved in the political arena, especially in an environment like the one that we're in today, you, forgive me for saying this, you are complicit. You are complicit in the evil that chooses to propagate itself. And make no mistake about it, the evil that is on this earth and in this country right now is a nefarious, absolutely calculated attempt to destroy that which belongs to God. And as human beings who are walking with God, we are guardians of freedom. We have an obligation to speak up about these things, and we have an obligation to stand up for righteousness. It's staggering to me that the same people that will condemn me for this are the same people that will stand for things like critical race theory and will actually say, hey, listen, Black Lives Matter. I don't believe in Black Lives Matter, Inc., but I believe in the statement. Well, if you believed in the statement, why aren't you defending the 1,500 black babies that are being killed every day? Why aren't you defending the blatant racism that exists every single day with respect to the fact that we have a system that continues to propagate the mindset within the Democratic Party of continuing to say, hey, listen, Black people, you have no responsibility. It's okay. Let us think for you. Let us take care for you. Let us take care of you. Let us speak for you. We don't care about the fact that the family is falling apart. As a matter of fact, we'll stand behind infrastructures that say we want to dismantle things like the nuclear family. Or I don't even know what they mean when they say the Western prescribed nuclear family. I don't even know what Western prescribed means. But anyway, it's pretty offensive if you ask me.
So Pastor, you're outspoken, and a lot of our listeners right now, they tune into our Sunday episodes as this is being aired, and they have a lot of pastors that are afraid right now. Your church is fully open, no social distancing, no masks. You still offer it on the radio if people want it, right? Live stream.
That's right.
So you offer that with liberty, responsibility, right? You trust your congregation to make the right choices. You have a little bit of a tussle with the LA Health Department. We don't have to get into that if you don't want to. But you're standing, you're speaking out. And so what do you say, though, to a like some pastors are saying, and I get these messages all the time, they say, Christians right now must stay out of the political realm. It's messy. It is dirty. It is not biblical. I get these messages, Pastor. And again, I am not a pastor. I'm a political guy and an author and all these things that is a Christian. And then I go into the Christian world and I kind of say, hey, guys, can you help us out over here? You know, because we're fighting and contesting for you. And I what do you have to say about that? Because so many Christians out there are being misled by their pastors.
Well, we're shepherds. Look, as pastors, we are called by God to be under shepherds. And as under shepherds, we get our hands dirty for our sheep. You know, one of the things that we're called to do is we're called to step in front of and step forward so that our sheep will not only be fed and be educated and understand, but we're called to put our necks out for them. And the problem is this: we talk about the stats, and you know, I've heard you say this many times. I'm a believer in the facts. I'm a believer in the truth. I'm not necessarily a believer in the emotions and so on and so forth. And this is a biblical principle. The emotions lie to us. They lie to us every single time for the most part. And what ends up happening is when we adapt a philosophy and a mindset that says I will be governed and ruled by my emotions, you see the kind of nonsense that you're seeing in the streets right now. And so this is an absolute truth. But one of the things that I think we've got to go back to is the fact that we as pastors need to put our faith into action. You see, one of the things that I told my board, and I made this very clear to them a long time ago, is I said, listen, guys, if I don't open up the doors to the church sooner than later. And, you know, we never really closed our doors in the sense of, yes, we didn't allow people in the sanctuary for the first few weeks because we didn't really know what we were dealing with.
Totally.
Probably the first 4 weeks or so. But we did have service in the parking lot. So and it was amazing. I mean, I got to tell you, especially our Easter Sunday, it was a sight to behold. But the thing that I would say is this. I would say that and this is what I told my board. I told my board, I said, look, if I get to the point where I continue to keep my doors closed, my word will become mud to the people that I serve. And here's the reason why, because I have spent my whole life teaching them to trust in the Lord. I've spent my whole life teaching them to not think about what it is that I can do in my own strength, but to lean on the strength of God. God gives us his word. Sometimes it does not completely check in with our emotional state at the time, but if we'll learn to ignore the emotions and seek out that which is good, then we begin to see the hand of God come into fruition in a great way. Now, here's the question that I would ask the pastors who continue to close the doors of their church. How in the world will you ever expect your people to trust you later?
That's right.
How will you ever expect your people to say, hey, well, my pastor, he's a man of faith. He trusts in the Lord. And for those that are going to churches where the doors are still being closed, I would simply say this. I would beg you to fast, pray, sit down and make an appeal to your pastor. If your pastor doesn't want to receive, then let me quote Rob McCoy, vote with your feet. Walk away. Go to a church that is open. Go to a church where things are happening, because here's the problem. Right now, the greater problem that exists in society has absolutely nothing to do with the threat of COVID. Okay, we already know that. The CDC has already told us this. We have 6% of the people that they say have died of COVID actually died of COVID alone. Everything else has been something else. And I'm not even going to talk about the scientific merits of this, because the meritorious value of what I'm saying is something that really is undisputed with anybody that speaks the truth. The issue that I would much rather visit here centers around what really is going on in society. Listen, Charlie, 1,500% increase in suicidal ideation. 25% of the kids that are out there are either thinking about suicide or actually committing suicide. For the first time in the last 3 months, listen, this is crazy. In the last 3 months, we have more kids that are dying of suicide that are under age 35 than will ever die of the coronavirus. And it's the same kind of nonsense that we choose to believe. We're watching a public health disaster, but that public health disaster has to do with the mental and emotional and spiritual condition of the people that are out there. And it goes along with the same lies that are being told right now in the age of what's going on with our law enforcement officers. Oh, the black man and the minority is being hunted right now. Oh, nationally, we're all being hunted. Let me tell you something. We lost way more black people. I mean, let me take this even further, okay? I mean, you've heard this. You've heard the statistics. You know, I don't even have to repeat this, but we lose way more black people in one day to abortion. One day we lose more black people in one day than we've lost in the last 25 years to law enforcement interactions. So what are we doing? What is it that, I mean, why isn't it that we are not being proud to take a stand for the truth? Because people are suffering, and they're suffering dramatically and tremendously. We need to speak up concerning those things.
And so you're totally right. So, Pastor, you are actually of Egyptian descent. So therefore, someone could call you
yes.
an African American. Is that correct?
That's
fair?
Right.
What is your stance on BLM Incorporated?
Okay, so not that I believe in identity politics. So I hate it. I hate everything that it stands for.
I abhor it too.
But let me just simply say, when you look at the black population, they are at best 13% of this country, if you want to talk about a minority, okay? I am less than 1%. And anybody who has any friendship with anybody who comes from Egyptian descent understands the fact that it would be greatly offensive for you to go to somebody who's from Egypt and say, oh, well, you're an Arab. No, I'm not an Arab. I'm actually born in Egypt. Well, my mom and dad are born in Egypt. I come from a North African country. So everybody that says I don't count because I'm from the Middle East or I count because I speak the truth. Okay, but putting all of that aside, when you talk about that, Black Lives Matter Incorporated affiliated. They are perhaps one of the most racist organizations alive besides the Democratic Party. Forgive me for saying that. I know I'm going to get myself in big trouble by lots of people for saying that, but they are extremely crude. These are people that stand for the destruction of the nuclear family. Listen, let me take it a step further. Here's something a lot of people don't hear about BLM Inc., right? You know how they make this big thing of say their name, you know, the person who died. Yep. Say their name, say their name. Listen, there are recordings. You can find them out there. I know they're trying to erase their nasty history, but there are recordings out there of the founders. I think it was Patrice who said this one. I don't remember which one of them, but one of the founders actually saying that we say the dead people's name because it's a spiritual chant. We are calling out their spiritual, I forgot exactly how she put it, but she's basically talking about the biblical definition of witchcraft. So we're saying, well, I don't believe in the organization, but I believe in the name. Well, let me give you a piece of advice for those of you that don't believe in the organization, but yet you believe in the saying. Come up with a different saying that expresses the value of all human life.
How about all lives?
Because Black lives matter, white lives matter, everybody's lives matter, and it's something that we need to grasp as human beings. Because the very moment in this nation we get to the point where we value one life over the other is the very moment we begin to see the furtherance of the kind of mechanisms that were deployed by Hitler to destroy a whole people. And that's the same thing, and we're seeing it in BDS. I mean, there's so many members of the House that believe in the boycott, divest, sanction movement. I mean, we're seeing it everywhere, and the racism is extraordinary, and it's especially a joke when you see people that come from Muslim nations that are in the House right now. And I can think a few of these girls that, and coming from a man who understands Islam very well, if they were to live in the countries in which they came from, believing what they believe, and even being as simple as putting a hijab on their face and representing men in their country, they'd be murdered immediately. Immediately, under the same Sharia law in Islam that they claim to defend and say is superior to our Constitution. It's offensive.
And so much there. What do you have to say to churches that are engaging in this BLM nonsense right now? They say it's scriptural.
They need to repent.
They say it's theological. The Southern Baptist Convention is embracing critical race theory. There are pastors that are telling their congregation, I got an email right here, Pastor, and I'll paraphrase it, that they're telling their congregation that systemic racism is the greatest issue in America. This is happening in our churches, Pastor. Make sense of this for us.
Yeah, it's evil. So it's them embracing a culture in which they are seeking to become like the culture and feel relevant, because they don't have enough faith in the true and living God to establish what real relevance should be in this culture. And that's a thing that we've got to always go back and reiterate. As Christians, we have the obligation to shape the culture instead of allowing the culture to shape us. And the whole mindset in which people can get away with doing this, spiritual leaders can get away with doing this, comes from their desire to be accepted and to be relevant instead of to actually tell the truth. Because oftentimes, as you know, when we tell the truth, there is a consequence for telling the truth. And the consequence oftentimes is, yes, people will reject us, people don't like us, but here's the thing, I want to be on the right side of history. And so for people like the Southern Baptist Convention, and by the way, I'll say this right now, I can tell you this from experience. When big organizations like the Southern Baptist Convention make a statement like that, they don't represent their whole constituency. A good majority of their constituency disagree with those ridiculous assertions, but the few influential people that are in those circles will do it so that they can create some kind of a weird adaptation to their political friends that they have, where they can kind of keep their status quo. The problem is this. The problem is they have to deny the truth completely. They have become modern day existentialists. Yep. That's exactly what they've become. They are walking away from the truth, because the truth is this. Our country didn't start in 1619. Our country was established in 1776. The truth is that the Constitution was a literal referendum. It was a literal referendum on slavery. When we talk about the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, oh my goodness, the Republican Party was in essence an abolitionist movement. And when we talk about the purveyors of slavery, let's talk about the sin of slavery for a second. How about we do this? I'll be able to get away. Well, I probably won't get it. They'll get mad at me for saying this, but it's true. The number one purveyors of slaves back then were the same amount of purveyors of slaves that exist today. It's the same group of people, and it is in many cases the Arab Muslim. And people are not, they're not, They're not accepting that. They're not looking about that. Go do some reading on the Barbary Coast. Spend some time looking at what reality is. Let's talk about what it is. Is slavery a heinous sin that our nation had to face and deal with? Absolutely.
Of course.
Did it come at a great price? Yes. We lost more Americans over the issue of slavery. Almost a million Americans. We lost so many Americans over the issue of slavery, fighting brothers against brothers, sisters against sisters, mothers against daughters. And I mean, it was a horrible, horrible period in our history, but it was also a time that's reflective of an amazing group of people that wanted to see equality for all. And yet we choose to deny it because we are becoming history revisionists. And the reason why the far left is getting away with it is because the church is allowing it. Mm. If the church never allowed it, I promise you it would never happen.
I completely agree. So, Pastor, can you now dive into the theology of it? Get scriptural for us, because there's a lot of people listening to this that are searching. And at the end, I do want to kind of talk about the need for people to give their life to Christ. We try to do that at least, you know, once a week with different people. But let's just say, can you just debunk when people say that, no, Jesus Christ would be marching in the streets of BLM. I hear this all the time. I hear this. Tell us theologically why BLM, critical race theory, are anti-biblical.
Yeah, so it would be a lie, okay? First of all, BLM is anti-biblical at the core of what the Bible teaches us. BLM starts becoming anti-biblical right at Genesis, right? Because we hear, or we read in Genesis, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth was without form and void, and then he goes on to describe this beautiful manifestation of the artistic rendering of God's hand when he created the world, okay? Then we get into God's construction of the family, okay? He puts husband and wife together. He tells husband and wife, hey, be fruitful and multiply. He creates the infrastructure of the family, and the core values of BLM Inc. is to tear it apart. Okay, the function, one of the greatest functions of mankind that God built into them, is to build up, is to actually be people who take something and imitate him, right? We were made in his likeness and image. God created, he molded and he shaped. Listen, there's a reason why Genesis 1:1 says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And then there's another reason why the declaration was made in verse 2, and the earth was without form and void. When you look at it in the Hebrew language, it's making a very simple declaration. It's saying, listen, God is the one who created the heavens and the earth. And then in verse 2, it says, he then went on to artistically render his beauty with his hands, molding and shaping creation into existence. Now, that means that God modeled for us what it looked like to actually create and to build and to be fruitful and to have dignity in our work. And so Black Lives Matter Incorporated, their whole stated objective is to destroy that so that single mothers can be trained to fight as activists to destroy that which gets built. So their core value comes against the scriptures right from the get. And for people who say that Jesus would have marched in the streets, it's an absolutely obscene and absurd thing to say. The mechanism that drove Jesus was his understanding of mankind's heart. When Jesus responded to somebody or when he spoke to somebody, Jesus never spoke to the circumstance. See, this is the thing that you got to understand. Mm. When you go out and riot in the streets, the rioting in the streets seeks to speak to a particular circumstance. As a matter of fact, it capitalizes on a particular circumstance.
That's good.
Something happens, thus I go respond to it. Jesus never did that. When Jesus went and spoke to somebody, he had a circumstance be unveiled before him. He was watching something happen, but what he did was he analyzed the condition of the hearts of the people he was spoke to, and he ignored the circumstance and spoke straight to the heart. It was a model of truth. Think about the woman at the well. The woman at the well is asking him all kinds of questions. Oh, what do you think about this, Lord? What do you think about that? And Jesus says, go get your husband. Now, what in the world? That didn't even make sense. Where did that come from? Well, that woman would have known where that came from. And she goes on to say, well, I really don't have a husband. Yeah, you're right, lady. You don't have one. You've had many, and the one that you have right now isn't your husband. And then he begins to speak to the longing in her heart for a desire for something deeper that she's thirsted for that no man could ever be able to address. And as he spoke to that, her life was changed. And you know what she did? She went forth and went to other people and didn't seek to destroy those people who lived the lifestyle that she used to live. That's not what she did. She didn't go to a far left tactic. You know what she did? She went to tell people about what Jesus did in her life. She went to tell people they were not obstacles to her. They were opportunities for God to do something substantial in their life. She said, hey, look at what God did in my life. And this is the story of what Jesus did. Jesus even did this while he was hanging on the cross. If Jesus was a protester and a marcher, why in the world would he allow himself to be crucified on the cross? And while he was being crucified on the cross, he looks over, he tells a thief on the cross who is begging for some kind of semblance of peace in his heart. He says, hey, today you're going to be with me in paradise. And here's the thing that people don't understand. And this goes back to the mentality of Black Lives Matter, Inc. and the mindset of Christianity as it relates to the scriptures. Think this concept through for just a second. When Christ died on the cross for us, it was considered the ultimate sacrifice. But here's the thing that people don't realize. He didn't go to the cross willingly. The fact that he went to the cross willingly is patently unbiblical. The Bible says that Jesus said, hey, look, not my will be done, but thy will be done. God, if there's any way this cup can pass from me, let it pass. He clearly didn't want to go to the cross willingly. He clearly didn't want to go to the cross. But you know what? He didn't go to the cross willingly. He went to the cross obediently. See, and that's the thing that we have to understand. Christ himself was the epitome of a man who demonstrated not capitulating to the emotions of a human being and yet yielding to the obedience given to us, stipulated in the scriptures by the Father. And he had a sinless nature. Now, he modeled to us what that means. So if we want to listen to our emotions, what do? Black Lives Matter, Inc. We go out in the streets, we burn things down. If we want to be obedient to our Father, we look at those things as opportunities and we seek to build. We seek to build. The only time we're ever told to tear anything down as Christians is to tear down the evil flesh that dwells within us because we are born in a condition of total depravity, right? The old man dies. Yes. We're crucified with Christ. We're reconciled again unto him in newness of life. And that's why this whole movement is so patently unbiblical. And that's why it is so evil to see these pastors capitulating to this wicked mindset.
That's a great way to put it, that God tells us to create on earth, not to tear down on earth. That's a very insightful point. So theologically, can you break apart some of this new left movement that's trying to intersect with Christianity, where they say Jesus would have been a Marxist, Jesus was a socialist? Where are they wrong there?
Okay, well, I can end it with just one simple statement, okay? If Jesus was a socialist and Jesus would have been a Marxist, Jesus would have never said, render unto Caesar's what is Caesar's and give unto God's which is God's. There's no way he would have done that. There is no way that Jesus would have submitted to the governing authorities as they subjected him to everything that led him to the cross. So right away, we can throw that mindset right to the curb. There's absolutely no room for making an argument like that because Jesus himself spoke against those types of things completely. Right? The tenets of Marxism and the tenets of socialism completely void ourselves of any kind of dependency upon God or any religious infrastructure. As a matter of fact, I think it was Marx who said that religion is the opiate of the people. And if you really think about it, you look at the tenets by which Christ taught us to live, everything that Christ taught us to live was completely and antithetically opposed to that which Marxism stands for. Marxism separates us from accountability with our Creator. Marxism separates us from any desire to want to work honorably. You can even go back to the Old Testament and you think about the way the Old Testament system worked. You go and you look at the farms that people owned. God told those farmers, he said, listen, leave the outside edges of your farm untouched. We don't want you to reap anything from your, when it's time for you to reap your harvest, don't touch the outside edges of your farm. Why? Because those that are poor, those that have no money, those that have no ability to be able to have their own farm, their welfare system is to go out to the farm themselves and to actually reap that which was left over. Now, that did several things. Number one, it taught those that were wealthy to take responsibility on a social level for those that did not have that kind of wealth, number one. But number two, and more importantly, it gave honor and it gave, here's a word, ready? Dignity to those who were without. They didn't just sit there and collect a paycheck from the government.
Wow.
They didn't sit there and demand to be on an equal level. They worked with their hands, and it created dignity with them. And you know what's really interesting about that? It always left room for those that were poor, because you had to develop a skill set to be able to harvest from anybody's farm, whether or not it was your farm. And as you develop that skill set, you would eventually be able to have what you need to actually create your own industry, to create your own skill set. And this is something that we learned today. You have a guy who's a repairman, he works for a large company, he develops a skill set with his hand, he gets really, really good at it, he starts some side jobs. Eventually, what does he do? He starts his own business, he walks away from that business, and we see that kind of a thing. And this is something that's inspired by what we read in the scriptures, and certainly not what we read in the writings of Marx.
Yeah, that's well put. So, Pastor, can you answer some wide, just kind of emails we get here? People say, Charlie, Christianity is nothing but mythology. It's been debunked. It's an old book. It's disproven. What is your best response to all that?
So my best response is those are statements that are not founded in fact. And my response would be, you need to show me that those statements are true. You need to prove those things to me. And most of the time, they can't prove those things. And there's a lot of statements we can make with respect to the Bible itself. The Bible itself presents, yes, many problems in the minds of most people that initially approach it simply because of the issues with respect to original language and so on and so forth. But what's really interesting when we look at the evidence of the accuracy of the Bible, right, as well as the evidence of the existing accuracy of the manuscripts themselves, we have more manuscript evidence to establish not only the historicity of the Bible, but the accuracy of the Bible than we do to establish the accuracy and even the historicity of Shakespeare. Okay? Mm. And people don't get that. Based on the rules that we use to approach this, there is a forensic to this. We have an establishment to be able to determine that the Bible is actually true. And the other thing that's really amazing is the Bible is the only book. There is no other book that makes claim to prophetic things that can be established as truly fulfilled by an examination of history and fulfilled with some remarkable, remarkable, remarkable accuracy, right down to the point where things even to the day in some respects have been accurately predicted in the Bible. And so for somebody to say that there's no way in the world that that can be true, it just comes from the fact that they sit in the same mindset that many people on the left sit. I've never had a conversation with anybody on the left, including liberal-leaning pastors, right? Where I said, they tell me, oh, I hate Trump. He's evil. He's wicked. He's a racist. He's this. I ask them the same question every single time. Give me one thing. One thing that establishes your statement. I just want fact, one fact. Don't give me an emotion. Don't tell me you don't like the way he says. Just give me one fact. I've never had a person that could give me one fact, not a single one. And it's the same thing with the Bible. People go back and they listen to the rhetoric that people share, but they never want to take the time to even establish its accuracy. And one of the questions that I oftentimes ask is, I say, well, have you even read the Bible from cover to cover? Most of the time they'll say no.
Yeah.
Most of the time they, so again, it goes back to, well, give me some solid insight as into why it's inaccurate or it has a fallacy, and then we'll come down and we'll deal with it, because there are answers to virtually everything. I've been doing this for 27 years, and I'm telling you, there's virtually an answer for every single fallacy that exists concerning the Bible or claim that's made concerning the Bible, because the truth is the truth, and that's why we're not scared of the truth.
So some people say, well, all religions are the same. They all believe in right. mysticism and all this. You came from your culture, the culture your family came from, your Christian lineage, but was an Islamic culture. You know, you speak 8 languages, right? Or something like that, right? 7 languages?
I speak a few languages, yeah.
Yeah. Somebody said you spoke 8 languages.
Yeah.
What makes Christianity different than any other religion, especially Islam?
Okay, so what makes Christianity different than any other religion is because every claim that Christianity makes is different than any other religion. As a matter of fact, it's really interesting when you look at the many other religions that are out there and you look at the claims that they make, they are oftentimes some kind of a perversion of the original claims of the Bible. So the Bible makes some very unique claims that no other religion does claim. For example, the Bible makes claims about Jesus Christ being God, Jesus Christ actually being crucified, buried, and resurrected, right? The historicity of that statement alone is easily identifiable. It's easily establishable. I mean, there's so many pieces of evidence that sit around the resurrection of Christ alone, which makes Christianity so unique. Christianity holds human beings accountable. Christianity, I mean, you look at all the philosophers that existed out there. If you look at every single philosopher that had anything credible to say about the human condition, you can go back and you can look at those statements and you can track them back to the Bible. You can look at them. I mean, even John, he makes a declaration about Jesus that was so unique. You got to understand the Greek mindset when John wrote his book. The Greek mindset when John wrote his book is there's 100 million gods out there, right? I mean, there's this God, that God, here God, that God, here, you know, and they worshiped every kind of God. And then John, he writes, he pins down this phrase. He says, En archein ho logos, kaio logos en proson theo, kaio theos en ho logos. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And then he goes on to say, and the Word became flesh. So he identifies every questionable God that they have, and he says any fake or fictitious God that you can think of is reconciled in the true and living God, and that's Jesus Christ, who manifested himself here on this earth, became a man, and suffered so that we could experience salvation. And it's very interesting because I don't know of any other religion that speaks of the story of redemption like Christianity does. I don't know of any other claim, any other mindset. And it's interesting. You look at Islam. Islam is the epitome of destruction. I mean, you think about this. Look, when those 9/11 terrorists got in those airplanes and they flew those airplanes into our building, they weren't screaming. They weren't going, ah, I'm so scared. No, they were saying, Ya lillahi illallah wa Muhammad Rasul Allah. They were literally praising the name of their fake God, Allah. And it's interesting because even the Quran itself, listen, I'm a biblical fundamentalist. I believe in the fundamentals of the Bible. If you are a fundamentalist of the Quran, then you believe in death, destruction, and you believe in taking over by force. Why in the world do you think these girls in the house right now who are Islamic are literally encouraging people to go out into the streets and take things by force? It's inspired by the cultic, demonic construction that you find in Islam. And it's so amazing to me too, because there's so many variations and cults of it that people continue to buy a lie. The Black Islamic movement, for example, is a great example. You have a lot of Black Americans right now that are really embracing the Black Islamic movement when it, by the way, Islam at its core does not like Black people. I mean, you think about it, but it's tolerated in the United States. The Black Islamic movement is tolerated in the United States by those that are in the Middle East because it is a motion for awareness, you know, of Allah. And so it's a further opportunity to propagate this fake religion. But again, it goes right back to it. And you go back. I mean, I think of Islam alone. It demands that you give your sons to kill for the glory of Allah, when the Bible says Jesus, the Son of God, was sacrificed. God gave his son for us that we wouldn't have to die. You think about that. And so it's a sad reality, but unfortunately, it's a truth that a lot of people don't even know about. And if they really did understand the tenets of it, they'd probably change their mind, to be honest with you.
Yeah, that's really well said. Last question. Why should Christians vote for Donald Trump?
Oh, my goodness, if you had asked me that question at the beginning of this podcast, I would take the rest of the podcast. First of all, let me just make this statement. I think President Trump is going to go down as the greatest president in U.S. history. And I know that there's a lot of Christians that get mad at me when I say that because they say, President Trump's a bad guy. He's a playboy, crazy, dirty businessman. The guy's been divorced 2 times, married 3 times, and he's just a... And I just tell them all the same thing. I say, look at the man's actions. Let's look at President Bush, okay? Let's just talk about President Bush for a second, because a lot of Christians love President Bush. And I got to tell you, I love the man. I love his person. I've loved every president we've ever had in the sense that I've always prayed for them. But you like President Bush? And everyone says, oh, yeah, I like President Bush. He's a really good guy. He's a classy guy or whatever. did President Bush ever do for anti-abortion what President Trump has ever done? And you know what they all tell me? They say, oh, yeah, he did. I say, OK, did he ever appear at a March for Life? Did he ever write more executive orders than you can shake a stick at to make abortion hard in this country? Did he ever push for legislation to come against abortion? Did he ever seek to appoint Supreme Court justices that would come against abortion? You could easily say no on that one, right? Yet most people don't realize that his own wife was an activist for pro-abortion. Mm-hmm. And that's a harsh statement to make, but it's absolutely true. And I'm going to stop to just simply say President Trump has done everything humanly possible to prevent abortion in this country. President Trump has done everything that he can as a president to fight against abortion. That alone would be enough of a reason for me to take a stand for him and to vote for him. But I'm voting for him for lots of other things. I'm voting for him because he is the friendliest president we have ever had towards free speech, towards religion, towards freedom of religion. He's been very friendly towards pastors. He's been very, very friendly towards every kind of cause that you can
Israel.
Think of that stands up for righteousness. He is the best president that we have ever had for the family. He's the best president we've ever had for education. He's the best president. Listen, you know this. I've talked about this. My wife and I are really, we're really seeking to adopt children. We're looking, we're asking God to bring little babies in our lives that we can adopt. People don't know this. President Trump has actually been very friendly for people wanting to adopt children, including him pushing to make more tax credits for people who spend a lot of money to adopt children. Our president, my president, I'm proud of my president, has done everything that he can possible. And let me just also say this. He is the epitome of a hardworking man. He's not lazy. He's up all the time. He's going on everywhere. I mean, you got this guy who's running for president who's literally hiding in the basement. He comes out to say hi every 20 some odd days when our president is going from 2 to 3 to 4 to 5 states every single day, and he's working hard. And you know something, I can listen, I have been in the business of people for a very, very long time, and I can tell when a man loves people. And that man loves people. Say, oh, give me evidence of that. How can you tell that he loves people? He just wants more power. He wants more power? Wait, hold on. He came into office worth $6 billion. $6 billion. Everybody loved him. I actually think Barack Obama at one point, before all the controversy,
that's right. he said the American dream
Donald
was to
Trump
be like
is
Trump.
The American
that's right.
dream.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. This is a guy who had the best life that anybody could, and yet he gave it all up for the sake of serving the American people. You know what that sounds like to me? That sounds like somebody that I know, that I love and I worship, and that's Jesus Christ. He acts in the same way. He behaves in a selfless way. He gave up everything, right, so that he could do for our nation. How many people are doing that right now? Even these people that are riding in the streets, they're not giving up anything. They're not giving up anything for this nation. Mm. They're tearing this nation down. These people that are serving in the Senate, they have no idea what it means to be independently wealthy. Their wealth comes from their lying, their cheating, and their stealing. And that's just reality. And I think it's something that oftentimes we dismiss. We don't really look at it for what it is. He truly is the greatest, if not the best president we've ever had in this nation. I'm so thankful to the Lord for him. And I think every single Christian should not be ashamed to say so. Listen, if we're not ashamed to say Jesus Christ is Lord, and it's acceptable for us to be ridiculed over standing for Christ, why wouldn't we stand for righteousness?
Mm.
Christ is far more supreme than Donald Trump will ever be. He's the one that's really going to save this world. He's the one where we truly have our hope in, right? If we're willing to take a stand for righteousness on his behalf, why wouldn't we be able to speak up when we see a man who is standing up for righteousness?
And contesting for what we believe in and what we care about.
Amen.
It's so important. Well, Pastor James, how can people stay in touch with you? How can they follow you on social media? And we're going to have you back sometime soon.
I'd be honored, bro. I really would be honored. Well, on my Instagram, I'm at it's at James Cadiz, and
K-A-D-D-I-S.
Yeah, so K-A-D-D-I-S, right. So at James Cadiz. And then my YouTube is Calvary Chapel Signal Hill. So it's just the name of my church. And we do a new video every single day. And we're talking about current issues every day and tackling a lot of these issues. And then on Facebook, our church Facebook is simply Calvary Chapel Signal Hill. And so if you go to any one of those, we'll keep you informed and continue to, you know, stand for righteousness. I think it's important.
Awesome. God bless you, Pastor James. We'll have you on soon. Thank you again.
Charlie, Love you, brother. Thank you.
Talk to you soon.
What a great conversation that was with Pastor James. If you guys want to email us your questions that I will answer tomorrow on our Ask Me Anything episode, please email us freedom@charliekirk.com, freedom@charliekirk.com. And tomorrow we are starting our national radio program. You guys can find our affiliates at just charliekirk.com, charliekirk.com. If you guys want to get involved with Turning Point USA, go to tpusa.com, tpusa.com. Get engaged, get involved. Start a high school or college chapter right now with Turning Point USA at tpusa.com. Thank you guys so much for listening. God bless. We'll be back with more tomorrow. Talk to you soon. God bless.